Test, test, test. There we go.
Woo, okay. Woo, woo.
Say it again.
Oh, woo, woo, woo.
There we go. Perfect. Okay. All right. Welcome back, everyone, to the Constant Rambling Podcast. I'm Sarah.
I am Lindsay. Yeah.
We are going to talk about episode 2 of Tiger King. Spoiler, this is our second time recording it.
I would love to say it's because we're perfectionists and the first one just wasn't good enough.
That's not the case. I had a major computer malfunction. I don't really even know. I couldn't find out what it was
white
that happened.
White screen of death.
Yeah. We had a white screen of death. I know there's like a blue screen of death, but my screensaver turned on, and so I tried to move the mouse to, you know, get the screensaver off, and then both of our screens were blank, and I could not get the computer to do anything, and so
we had literally just finished, like, the whole episode. We were, like, getting ready to do goodbyes, and then
nope. Yeah.
So if we're, like, a little less funny this time, which is impossible, give us grace.
Yeah. Yeah. This is our second time going through it.
We only
Maybe
have so
we'll
many
just
jokes.
Breeze by it. Like, the first episode was, like, an hour and a half long. Maybe this episode will be, like,
20 minutes.
A condensed 20.
No, this is the one about Doc Antle's harem.
Oh, yes.
We will never run out of things to say.
Okay, so episode 2 is called Cult Personality, and we open to see that Saf had a terrible accident. It was a crazy scene.
Yeah, they just, like, guns going.
Yeah.
Like, guns going? Guns out?
Guns out? Guns a-blazing?
Yes, that's what I'm going. Guns going. They're going. Guns blazing. Like, they just come in with, like, people running across the farm, and you hear, like, her arms torn off, which, again, it's his, but whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
Although, I did make a note, because before we had this conversation about Saf, I have in my notes, although did you notice that they call her a him? So at one point in the documentary, they must have
realized.
Back and forth. Right, yeah. So, but the best part for me is that we see Joe, and he is wearing an EMT uniform, and he has this little sheriff's star on his shirt, and I was thinking, so did he change into this when he heard the news, or
was it a lucky coincidence? Or were they
like on Wednesdays, I just wear my EMT uniform.
Right. Or like, was literally like, at what point? Because you see him in this like pretty quick after.
Yes.
And it's like, okay, did someone, like, I just need to know how it went down.
Yeah.
Someone like, hey, Saf got his arm torn off.
Right.
And then he's like, okay, hold on 1 second.
1 minute. I need to wardrobe change.
Did he like go check, see that it was stabilized, be like, all right, ambulance is on the way. I'll go do my outfit change real quick. Like,
yeah.
That. I just need to know.
It was a bizarre opening in general.
Yes.
But yeah, just seeing him with his arm, like, they don't show anything, but, you know, he's obviously hurt, and then you just see Joe, who's this huge personality in an EMT. It was just insane.
With his sheriff star, and he goes into their little, like, gift shop.
Oh my goodness. This is my favorite
and
part.
And there are people, like, in there, and so he's like, right off the bat, he's like, hey, we had an employee put their arm in a cage, got it torn off.
Yeah.
And he's just, like, about his business. He's like, if you want your money back, or you can just come back another day. But these people are just staring at him, like, blank face. No reaction, no freak out, nothing.
The camera moves. Like, the camera pans across the whole gift shop, and everybody's just deadpanned. They have zero reaction. Like, they hear this every other day, and they're like, oh, again, someone got their arm torn off by a tiger. It was insane. It was crazy.
Like, maybe if you're at the point in your life that you're going to the GW Zoo, you're just like, yeah, it's what I expect, you know?
I mean, I was only there to get my tiger sex gel.
Don't forget the underwear.
Yes.
I have the cheetah print. I need the snow leopard. For the winter sexy times.
Yes. So, you know, before they kind of start, this is just the intro to the episode. Before they start the intro, I like that Joe has to clarify to his employees, you know, go about your chores, but don't stick your arm in any cages.
Right.
Like, that should definitely probably be rule
baseline.
Number one, right?
Right. And, like, also they don't explain, like, why it happened. Because, like, Saf does take the blame. Like, he says, like, I shouldn't, like, I just was being stupid. Or he says something like that. But like, we don't know, like, did he know not to put his arm in that specific cage?
Right.
Or are all the animals just, like, waiting to take someone's arm off?
Right.
Or was it feeding time?
Exactly. Like, that was my thought. I was thinking, well, I wonder if it was feeding time, and so the tiger smelled something and just thought right. it was... Because I could also see having this sense of being completely... like normalized
to the situation.
Yeah, too used to it. And so you're normalized to the situation. You get comfortable. You let your guard down and you mm-hmm. forget that these are predators. Like they're right. their whole role in life is to eat yeah. and to kill things to eat, basically.
That's all they do.
That's all they do.
Yes. Yeah. So we don't really get that explanation.
Yeah.
But we do. So then it pops to like the future of their interviewing Saf. And he says that like he saw the way that Joe was getting this flack.
Yeah.
For this. And they, first they tell us actually about him choosing to take off his arm yeah. actually.
Because they say that he could write his name. He had enough function in his arm, in his hand, to write his name. And, but yeah, they see...
The doctor says it'd be, like, 2 years of reconstructive surgery and,
I thought
like
it was
therapy?
4 months. I think it was 4 months of reconstructive surgery, maybe 2 years of therapy.
Okay.
Yeah, something like that.
And he just wanted to do it?
No.
And he was like, take it off, like...
Yeah, and we had talked about this on the... Lost recording about how it would have been, again, more information. Because when you see, I think, some of these things in little chunks, you're like, this is insane. Right. Why would he choose to do this? Right. But, you know, I wonder if when the doctor says we could do this surgery, I wonder if the doctor also followed up with, but I'm not guaranteeing that it will yeah. work. And so we could go through all of these surgeries, which is obviously an expense as well.
That was
you
my
know?
Thought. Like,
and... And it still might not work. Like, there's only a 20% yeah. chance that this will actually work. Because then at that point, you're thinking, okay, well, that's different than just being like, no, I don't got 4 months yeah. to waste in a hospital. Let's take it off. Well, which is how it's presented.
Yes, they make it seem like he's just like, I'm impatient. But, like, my thought was that it probably also was a money thing. Like, yeah. these people don't seem to have a lot.
And we will get into
that. They're living in the
trailers.
Right. Oh, my gosh. So, like, with how expensive healthcare right. is in America,
sure.
like, he probably just couldn't,
yeah.
like, afford that. That
yeah.
he's like, I can't afford to do this well, so there's this, it most likely won't work. Like, that could be it, too.
Yeah.
That the doctor's like, it will only work if you commit to 2 years of therapy.
Yeah.
And he's just like, I can't.
I can't. Yeah. I don't have that kind of yeah. money. Well, and I thought that the documentarians did a good job because I'm going to be real honest with you. I watched the whole first episode and
yes.
I had no idea that he was even missing part of his arm.
No, you have no clue because he's in this baggy
yeah.
like Carhartt.
Yeah.
And he's just like, it just looks like he's got his arms crossed.
Yeah. They
it's
did a
shocking.
Good job.
Yeah.
It was super shocking.
Because then you see him, like, in this footage. You're like, oh, it's the same footage. It's been gone this whole time. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. They do a good job of not telling you, like, what you
sure.
don't need to know.
Yeah, until you
like,
need to know it.
Until they
It
wanna...
was super sneaky. I was
yep.
like, because then I went back to watch the first episode. I'm like, yeah, for sure. He doesn't have an arm.
He doesn't have a hand, at least.
Right.
Yeah. And so Saf says he wants, like... that their mission is to give these animals a fighting chance.
Right.
And he saw how much flack Joe was taking.
Right.
And so he chose to go back to work to save Joe.
Yeah.
He, like, liked his work. He liked the life he had.
Right.
And you hear from Rick Kirkham, like, he's interviewing Saf, and
yeah.
he says that there's no ill feelings.
Yeah.
Like, he just says, like, this is my mistake. Like,
right.
I stuck my arm in a cage.
Yeah.
It's not on Joe.
Yeah.
Which
and
is just crazy. Like,
yeah.
I think I'd still be bitter. Like, I'd be, like, trying to do it, you know? I'd be, like, finding a way to make it not my fault. Like...
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if it's, like, an animal lover thing or
yeah.
that he just loves the animal so much and doesn't blame them. Which, of course, like, I don't think anyone blames the animal.
No.
Because...
That's not its fault. It's in a cage.
Right. It's in a cage. And, again, these are its basic instincts.
Right.
You know? So...
And then we hear about John Reinke
yeah.
having no legs.
Yeah, because he says, you know, that his attitude, nothing can bring him down, and which is easy because he works with a man who has no legs. And so
yeah.
we find out that he didn't lose his legs to tigers, which I'm sure he John gets asked about. Yeah, yeah, John didn't lose his legs to tigers because I'm sure he gets asked all the time. And he has these really cool prosthetic legs with, like, it almost looks like tattooing or, you know, like has artwork on it. Yeah. But, yeah, he lost his legs in a ziplining accident. Yeah.
Which I just kind of had to laugh, like a ziplining accident. Yeah. It's just so, like, that, I don't know.
You work in, like, a super dangerous place. And you lost your legs in a ziplining accident.
But this was in the middle of him working there, too. Because he talks about, like, walking around the farm afterwards. Yeah. Like, he still had his legs.
Right.
And he was like, walking on bone. He said, like, 20 miles a day.
Gross.
Until, like, I guess they just had to, like, cut his legs off.
Yeah.
Because he just, like, ruined them.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I need to know why he was ziplining also. Like, because unless you're, like, in Aruba, like, I don't know why people just go ziplining.
I think it's, like, a thrill-seeking thing.
But in Oklahoma? Like, ooh, I can see more grass from over here. Like, I just don't get it.
That's true. There's not a lot of sightseeing, I'm guessing, in Oklahoma. Just lots of prairies. Apparently a zoo.
Right. But John just, like, goes back about it. Like, he takes his legs off and he just keeps working there. And we hear from Rick Kirkham, like, he even says, like, there's something addictive about the feeling of power from being around the animals.
These animals, yeah.
That you just, like, you can't, like, you just want to go back. Like, you're willing to cut off your arm and just go back to work and, like, lose your legs or walk around on bone.
Oh.
Because, like, so you just want to be there.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
Yeah. And we'll get into that cult type of mentality more.
Cult personality, if you will.
Yeah. So we're back to Doc Antle, who, again, is directing all the shots of the documentary, which is just. And I had put a note, I'm like, is this guy high all the time? And because his eyes are just so wide, and he just seems to be talking so loud, and
we see him just taking his elephant, like, on a stroll. Yeah. He's just sitting atop. They're strolling through the neighborhood. This car honks. It's like, hey, Doc, how's it going? He goes into the river. They're waving to boats.
Yes.
And, like, everyone is just unfazed.
Right. Everybody's like, well, this is just Tuesday.
Right. So either, like, everyone sees him a lot and is used to it, or this sort of thing happens way more often in the South than we know.
Than we know, for sure. Just people riding elephants, walking down the street.
Just taking a stroll to the river.
Yeah, he says that Doc Antle says, anyone who doesn't love tigers is just insecure and broken. Great line.
Yes.
I don't think you have to be in. I mean, I think I don't dislike tigers, but I don't think I love tigers.
I don't know.
But I don't feel insecure and broken. Maybe I am. Maybe he's onto something. Maybe I should go to Doc Antle's farm to find myself.
Yes. He can give you a new name. Suresh.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, so then we see Kirkham, and he tells us that Joe's main source of business was breeding baby tigers, because then he would sell them to little zoos all over the area.
Yeah.
And then...
And there's the cub petting. Like, they have to keep them
cub
young.
Petting. Yeah, yeah.
And we see them with, like, these one-hour-old babies, like, passing them around people. Like, I don't think they're holding it, but they're, like, looking at it, which,
he's definitely holding it.
Is so...
That seems super young.
It's so sad.
Yeah.
So it's that idea of, like, the status thing that, like, Carol talks about. That she's like, whatever.
We'll
but she's like, anyone who owns a tiger, like, they just use that to elevate their status. Like, as soon as you meet someone, they're, like, pulling out their wallet. They're like, look at my tiger.
Right.
Which, to be fair, I would too. You know, like, it's tiger, you know. But she's like, everyone's just profiting off these animals.
Right.
Yeah. For selling and petting and whatever.
Yeah.
Oh.
So... John Finley, we cut to John Finley, who's still shirtless. Yeah. I don't know. He just doesn't own a shirt, apparently.
No.
And he tells us that he drove lions and tigers and bears. And I wrote, oh, my. Like, did he say that on purpose? He had to.
Yeah.
And then he says ligers, which at first I was like, what's a liger? And then we learn later that they're crossbreeding tigers and lions together.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
I don't know. I don't know enough about it to know why it would be bad.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like that's like mules.
Sure.
You know, like we...
Or dogs. People crossbreed dogs all the time.
So they seem like enough of a similar species that, sure. like, it doesn't seem that bad to me.
Yeah.
Maybe there's something I don't understand.
Right.
But, like, I don't know. Why yeah. not?
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah. It's all very confusing.
It is.
It's a lot of stuff we don't know.
It is. They don't explain it all well.
Right. Is it like in vitro? Or are they like sticking them in there and hoping they get it on?
Ooh,
like,
and don't kill each other?
Right. It just, I feel like all of that comes into like how okay it is, you know?
Yeah. So Eric, the filmmaker, asks, you know, how much does it cost to buy a baby tiger? And Joe tells us about $2,000, but reminds us, but it's illegal now, which yeah. I think we get into this later. You know, then how do zoos get tigers? You know,
that's
if
what
they're not
John
buying
says.
Them.
Like there, or maybe it's Joe, but they say, like, there isn't a zoo that's not buying
yes.
cubs when they don't have them.
Right. I think it's John. Yeah.
Which is fair. I know a lot of zoos, like, at least that I've been to, have said, like, oh, this is a rescue. You know, like, this
yeah.
one came from here because it was endangered or damaged. But that can't be all the zoos.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they, like, try to save them. Like, if they want a snow leopard and there's no, like, endangered snow
right.
leopards, like, they need, like, zoos are also a business.
Yeah.
We like to think of them as, like, this nice thing for the animals.
Right.
But, like,
it's
that's
not.
No. Like, they're... It's people making money.
Yeah.
Like, they're nicer versions of Joe's stuff, you
yeah.
know, the official zoos.
Yeah.
So.
I think I've only been to one zoo where all the animals didn't look super sad about their life. And it was...
The Pittsburgh Zoo is awesome.
Oh. Okay, I've never been to the Pittsburgh Zoo. It was the Omaha, Nebraska Zoo.
Hmm.
And that zoo was amazing. They really put a lot of thought and effort into the environments that all of the animals
yeah.
are in, and they do a really good job. You know, all of the nighttime animals,
mm-hmm.
they, it's completely dark. Like, it's, I mean, there's
That's
lights, obviously,
cool.
you don't just
right.
trip over yourself,
yeah.
but but it's
Whoop,
super
fell
dark,
into the tiger pen.
And they do a lot of animal research, and they do a lot of breeding, too, to help get certain species populations back
right.
up. But that was the best zoo I've been to. I've been to different zoos, and
right.
I just feel like the animals look sad. And
a lot about, of times.
Yeah.
The Pittsburgh Zoo is a lot of fun. They have, like, one path that takes you through all, everything.
Okay.
So you don't have to, like, wander
oh,
around.
That's
so it's just,
nice.
Like, it's, like, this nice little stroll, and you see all the different animals
yeah.
in line.
That's, I like that.
And the stuff seems nice. I mean, I was a long time ago, so maybe if I went again, the animals would seem sad. But I remember...
I think when you're a kid, all the animals seem amazing, so
I
you don't really notice.
I was in college.
Okay,
so
okay.
not young.
Sure.
But I wasn't paying attention, so...
Right.
I was there with a boy. Oh, my God. So, yeah. But actually, the zoos in Japan, I have family members who live in Japan,
oh.
and they have, like, night zoos. Because, so the
oh.
nocturnal animals, like the
Can
tigers and the lions,
on the schedule.
Are, like, more active
yeah,
then.
Yeah.
She said it's crazy that you'll be, like, in the park,
yeah.
and, like, you'll just hear, like, this
lions,
lion, like,
yeah,
actually
yeah.
roaring.
Because yeah,
they're,
yeah.
like, active, and it's, like,
yeah.
pitch black. So,
hmm.
things like that. Like, I wonder if different countries have different types of zoos.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, if it's an American thing to, like, put them all in a tiny cage, or, like,
sure.
are zoos everywhere like that?
Right, right.
So, who knows?
Okay, so that was a long tangent about
Sorry.
Zoos. We apologize. If you're still listening, congratulations.
Yeah.
You get a gold star. Okay, so, you know, Rinky, I'll probably cut that big, long, awkward pause out. Rinky tells us that, you know, Doc Antle's probably still buying, or kind of like alludes to the Doc Antle's still buying baby cubs from Joe. And then we meet Tim Stark, who was definitely, in the past, maybe when it was legal, bought baby cubs from Joe. And so, yeah,
Tim Stark.
We meet this character, Tim Stark. Oh, my word.
Who they have written that he, like, runs, I guess, like, a wildlife and need center?
Right.
Which, it looks, from what he says, it sounds very different than the wildlife and need centers that I know. But we start with this quote. Do tell us, Sarah.
Okay, so... Yeah, so Tim is introduced, and he says, according to Thomas Jefferson, any law that you thinks unfair or injustice, it is your obligation, it is your responsibility to stand up against that BS law. So I looked it up because I was like, this can't be right. Like, Thomas Jefferson's a pretty well-known, you know, political figure, founding father, that kind of thing. And so I was like, this can't be right. So according to an article that was published in the Thomas Jefferson Encyclopedia, the quote is, if a law is unjust, a man is not only right to disobey it, he is obligated to do so. But they do say that that quote has not actually been found in any of Thomas Jefferson's papers or notes or anything like that, but they suggest that perhaps it's paraphrased from the statement in the Declaration of Independence, you know, which he helped write, which says, whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it and institute new government. So that's...
I just feel like it's taken very out of context. Like, he's talking about, like, real intense levels of, like, restrictions of liberties and corrupt government. Yeah. And Tim Stark is just like, I want my tigers. Right. I'm standing up to that BS law. It's just such a different, I think it's very different than Thomas Jefferson meant for it to be.
And he is making sure that we know that he has First Amendment rights because he's standing on his porch and he's posing with an AK-47. Like, this is, again, our first introduction to Tim Stark.
And a monkey. Who is with him all the time.
That monkey is so cute.
It's super cute.
I love that monkey. Yeah. I love that the monkey is with him the whole time.
It's just his little buddy. He's hanging out.
And he, like, feeds him. Like, that monkey is his best friend. Like, he for sure talks to him and pretends that the monkey answers.
Yep.
When
no one else is around.
And
so we hear him saying that he's like, if people are concerned, they need to donate... He's like, they should donate money to places like mine.
Yep.
Because if these animals, he's like, talking about how they breed these animals.
Yep.
And so that's why we want more, because they're endangered species. However, the direct quote would be, they should donate money to places like mine, where we breed them. Number one, they're an endangered species. Duh. Like, exactly like that.
The emphasis on duh is strong.
Oh my gosh, I was like, are you being interviewed for like a TV series and you just said duh? He's like, what's the first thing you should do to save an endangered species? Make
more.
Which, yes, but having 20 tigers in captivity is not the same as having them in the wild.
Yeah.
Like, sure, they still exist, but like their natural habitat is still lacking them.
Yeah.
So you breeding in captivity doesn't actually do that much to save the species in their real life way.
Right. And then it kind of gets in. So then you kind of think or along the same thought of, okay, so if we donate to places like yours, what are you doing with the money? How are you using the money?
Right.
You know, even with Carol Baskin's place. How is she using the money? Is it going, because if it's going towards feeding these animals, you know, that's one thing. Mm-hmm. But if it's going towards profit and like you put a new addition on your house, that's not helping an endangered species.
Or your legal battles.
Exactly. So it's not really helping. They don't ever really say how they're helping the endangered species other than just breeding more. And when they breed more, they're just using these bred cubs for this cub petting. Yeah. So, you know, to me, if you're really behind the animals and you're an activist and this is your life and this is your passion, then why aren't you donating or giving money to, you know, their natural habitats to create these sanctuaries where there's no poaching allowed, you know, there's no deforesting allowed, you know, they can just have their natural habitats.
These, like, huge sanctuaries of actually secure areas where the animals are living real lives.
Yeah.
And being maintained and helped because they might need it, you know?
Right.
But they're being animals.
Right.
Not zoo exhibits.
Exactly.
All right. I digress. Okay.
So Carol, who apparently has nothing better to do, just tracks everything that Joe does and every move he makes and, you know, everything that he sells or any place that he gives these cats to. And then we meet Mario Tabro.
who is a fascinating character.
He's super fascinating. He was arrested in 1987 for racketeering and trafficking narcotics, and which was $75 million in illegal drugs in 1987.
So much money.
Yeah, that's a lot of money for 1987. Oh. I mean,
that's a lot of drugs.
Right, that's a lot of drugs. For sure, that's a lot of drugs.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, you could probably double that in today's money and
right.
drugs.
Right, inflation.
Yeah. Yeah, holy moly. So the documentary crew rolls up to Mario's place to try to get in to see if they could, you know, talk to him or if he'd want to be part of this, you know, documentary.
Right.
And they are stopped right at the gate.
Yes.
This guy who has a gun at his hip is like, yep. Do you have an appointment? And they say no. He's like, you got to get out of here then because this is private property. You can't be here. You need mm-hmm. to have an appointment.
Yeah. He shuts it down.
So
we meet this guy who used to work for Mario.
Yes. Mark McCarthy is his name.
Yes.
Yes.
And he talks about how, like, all these people were like, oh, how can you work for a man like him? And he's like, I did it for the animals.
Yeah.
He had the coolest animals. Yeah. Which I just, like, I respect the love of the animals.
Right.
I just don't think it's worth it to, like, work for a notorious drug dealer. But we hear a lot of sad stuff that, like, he would take these snakes and cut them open, stuff them full of drugs, stitch them back up, and, like, didn't really care if they lived or died.
Right.
But
it was just about importing the drugs into the
that
country.
If he got caught for importing snakes, the penalties were way less than the drugs. So he was hoping just to get fines for that. However, they find it anyway, and he gets caught regardless.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So, okay, so Mario, I thought it was funny. The first thing, you know, they get on to Mario's place after, you know, Mark McCarthy kind of makes his contact with Mario. And mm-hmm. so they go on to Mario's place, and the first thing we hear Mario Tabro say is, I just want to tell you, we make everything stupid proof because people will do stupid things, which I'm sure this didn't happen like around the same time and they're just cutting it all together with the documentary, but it was just throwing such shade because at the beginning of the episode, Seth literally gets his arm torn off.
Right. I just wrote, amen.
And so we see, you know, Tony's interacting with the tigers. He's playing with them and explaining that he provides the animals with as much love and passion that he can.
He says, and, like, if you can't give them the wild that they deserve,
sure,
then you should give them the best life you can.
Right.
Which, the that they deserve, I thought was, like, an interesting addition.
Right.
Because, like, you're admitting that they deserve it, so then, like, but you're willing to own them anyway.
Right.
So I was like, well, you bought them. They didn't have to be here if you think they deserve the wild, so.
And he does say that he brings up a point that the tigers, or in his opinion, that the tigers and the lions and these big cats, they do get bonded with humans. And I wonder mm-hmm. how true that is. Because I know humans get bonded to animals, but
I think so.
I know animals get bonded to their owners, but I wonder, I don't feel like there's any scientific research that shows that these big cat or big predators,
with the limited amount of interaction that they have, it's not like a dog that's living with you and cuddling with you.
Right.
Like, how much they bond.
Yeah.
And he says that he first started selling drugs to maintain his animal habit. Which, given the fact
Been there, done that. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Which, you know, that's his reasoning. But then, like, he stuffed the snakes full of drugs.
Yeah.
So, like, was it just some of the animals he cared about and the others he didn't? So, like, or is that just his reasoning now to make himself feel good? He's like, I just needed to support my animals.
Well, he tells us more about his conviction. So, in 1987, he tells us that people think that he was the prototype for Scarface.
Congrats.
Yeah, he said he, you know, like Lindsay said, he sold drugs to pay for his animal habit. He was also accused of murdering an ATF informant. And he says that it wasn't him. It was, you know, someone shot the ATF informant and basically dumped his body, you know, in front of Mario's place. And there was a crazy guy that he worked with who was probably high on drugs. And his solution to this ATF informant being dumped on their property was, well, let's just cut him up and burn his body.
Dude.
And instead of Mario being like, no, man, maybe we should call the police. This is crazy. He, you know, he just goes along with it. And he does say, he kind of, not takes responsibility, but he does say, you know, he claims he didn't shoot the guy or cut him up or burn him, but he was there. So in his mind, you know, to the judge, he's like, what difference does that make? I was standing right there. I let it all happen.
Yeah. So he says, like, what am I supposed to tell them? Like, I didn't do it, but I watched while it did, while someone else did. Right. Like, who cares?
He literally says, well, I saw the guy take the circular saw to his neck. And I was like, oh my goodness.
Yes.
That is so good.
Unexpected detail.
Right. So he was sentenced to 100 years in prison. But he only served 12 of those 100 years. So he became an FBI informant.
Yeah.
And then he was let out after 12 years, and they let him out on probation.
Yeah. Which, honestly, he seems kind of chill and nice.
I know. You mean as murderers go?
I know. I'm probably wrong.
Oh my goodness.
Maybe he had a change of heart. He seems calm. He's like just a gentle old man with his wife and his monkeys and his cats.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure, Lindsay, that if any of us had a TV crew in front of us, we would maybe also.
He's got shifty eyes, but he seems kind of chill. I just feel like he's, like, old. Like, maybe that was, like, young Mario, you know? And he's like, man, in my youth. And now he's just, like, hanging out with his cats. Like, I'm probably wrong, but I don't know. He just seems chill.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Maybe he's just high on his marijuana.
Probably.
So his own stash.
We meet his wife Maria.
Yes.
And she shows us all of these clothes that she has for these monkeys. And it's there's like four closets filled with all of these baby clothes.
Yes.
That she dresses these monkeys in
for all the holidays and like everything. And she admits, she's like, I think I even love them more than my own children. I was like, you know, that's a bold move. Like, just admit that. Like, at least you're being honest.
It's super funny. And it's, you know, you just see these monkeys and all these pictures that they show of her dressing up these monkeys in these tiny little outfits. And it's hilarious.
Yes. And we hear Mario going over how he got, like, his, like, original few animals.
Yeah.
And he's just, like, listing, like, oh, I got this here, I got that there. And at one point he says, like, I got six lions from a guy who was killed by a lion. Yeah. It just, like, moves on. And I'm like, were they killed by the lions you now own? Like, he just breezes by it. And I'm like, did you swoop in and be like, thank God this guy's dead, I'll take his lions.
I got this.
Right, like, how did you end up with them? Like, it's just a little suspicious.
So Maria takes us into Mario's office and hear what I think is the best line of the whole series. So she's showing us a book that apparently Doc Antle wrote, and a woman who I can't remember the name, but she's the producer of the film, and she says, well, what kind of doctor is he? And she responds, mystical science. Which means nothing. That's like those are two words that you put together, but they don't actually mean anything.
Voodoo.
You can't make a sentence with them. But you can tell that she's trying really hard not to laugh. Right. Like, she has this look on her face like, if I laugh, are they going to cut it out?
Yes.
Or is Doc Antle going to come for me?
Yes. She's so serious that, like, you know it's fake. Because I'm like, no one believes in this that much. She's like. So then she's flipping through these pictures.
Yep.
And they're like, oh, who's that? And she just offhand is like, one of his wives.
Yep.
And we hear her. Then we go into this, like, it's kind of montage.
Yeah, of different people answering the question, how many wives does Doc Antle has? And we get a bunch of different answers because Maria says three.
She says four or five wives.
Oh, does she? Okay, I thought she said three.
No, because then Joe says three or four girlfriends.
Right.
Saf says nine wives.
Yes. And then they ask Eric Cowie how many wives that he has. And Eric's like, I don't effing care.
Long hair, sunglasses still on,
smoking a cigarette,
just over it.
He's like, I'm here for the animals. I don't know what you don't get about this. I do not care about anyone else I work with. I don't care about who Doc Antle is or what he's doing.
I'm so sick of his wives. I don't effing care.
And so then we see Doc Antle again. Again, his eyes are super wide and he's definitely high on speed or something.
So intense. So fast.
And they talk about, you know, they're driving through the property and he's asking, oh, my girl, you know, China lives here. My girl Moshka lives here and everything. Yes. And so they ask him, they're like, oh, you know, they ask him about his private life, and he says, we can't get into my private life. It's not for primetime TV.
Which is a bold statement considering what's on primetime TV these days.
It's true. And it's on Netflix. I mean, I'm sure he didn't know where it was going to air at the time, but yes. It was, yeah.
Okay, so I have my insertion story here.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm scrolling through Instagram. This is like a year ago.
Oh,
and
yes!
I found Moksha, one of his wives, on Instagram. And I was like, oh, she's so fun.
Yeah.
She's so cool. And she's like talking about, she's showing all these activities she does with the tigers. And she's like, it's really enriching for them. And I was like, yeah. And I did some research into their little like place, which is tigers, which it's T.I.G.E.R.S. And they never explain what the full name means.
Right.
Which is just such a long, like, anagram?
Acronym.
Acronym.
Yes.
Dang it. You know, I did this in the first recording,
too. You totally did. That's so funny.
I don't know the word acronym, apparently. So I, like, fell for Moksha in this little, like, environment.
Yeah.
And so then I, like, eventually unfollowed her because, like, I got, just, you know, same content.
Right.
Whatever. And so then I'm watching this.
Oh,
and
my
then, like,
goodness.
Go through all his wives and I had to, like, pause it and, like, go to Instagram. I was like, I fell for it.
What?
I fell for the cult. I thought they were so cool. I was just so shook.
Do you think that you honestly could fall for a cult?
Okay. I think a baby cult like this.
A baby cult.
That's not like, it's less like of a religious like intensity, like we're
sure.
going to the farm and like we're gonna live in the wilderness.
Here's
you know,
your
like,
linen.
Right, braid your hair and wear a sack dress. Oh, well, I do like sack dresses, but not like burlap sacks. And so like that, like I couldn't do, but like
right.
a kind of chill like cult I could see myself falling for, maybe.
Like a really unorganized one?
Maybe. I'm too lazy for a cult, though. We talked about this. Like, I think I'm just too lazy. Like, they'd be like, hey, go dig this field. And I'd just be like, it's 8 a.m. I'm tired.
Right.
And
I don't want to.
They'd just kick me out. They'd be like, you don't get to come to the promised land. Go. We don't need you.
I think I'm too much of a firstborn to be in a cult.
You're
because
too
I'd probably
competitive.
I'm competitive. I'm finding a lot of things out about myself later in life, friends, and I found out that I'm super competitive. And I am a little, well, not controlling, but I feel like my brain just works efficiently, and so when I see things that are inefficient, my brain is immediately like, no, this is dumb.
Which
you're
is
doing
most,
this
most
way
are
yeah,
inefficiently.
let's get this ball rolling. If we're going to do this, let's do it the right way and let's do it as, you know, as efficiently as possible. And they'd be like, man, she is so controlling. Get her out of here.
Exactly. The leader would be like, Sarah, I would like you to do this specific task. And she'd be like, let me tell you how we should actually be doing this.
Actually, this is dumb. You're doing it all wrong. This takes way longer doing it this way.
Yeah. I'd get kicked out for being lazy, and you'd just get shot for being lazy. They'd be like, the disrespect, and she'd just be dead. I'd be wandering the desert. Like, Sarah's just, like, in a ditch.
That's super funny.
So, anyway.
We go to Ames.
Back to Doc Antle.
Oh, yeah.
We meet Barbara Fisher.
Yep, we go to Ames, Iowa.
We go to Ames, Iowa, which I wonder why she chose Iowa. I just need to know why anyone chooses Iowa.
You know, Iowa's in the news a lot lately with all this Lori Vallow stuff. So.
I know nothing about that. I don't follow the news.
Okay, I don't also follow the news, but I do follow a lot of true crime podcasts.
And they're filling you in.
Yeah. It's not in Ames, Iowa, but it is in Iowa. I can't even remember where it is now. But
secondhand news with a side of sarcasm.
Yeah.
The podcast. Briefing.
Yeah, it's this Lori Vallow. Anyways, we can get into that maybe
Ooh.
On a different episode.
All
but
right.
Lori Vallow is a crazy person and she lives in Iowa. Mm-hmm. And a lot of LDS
Ooh.
People.
Oh, I was so excited.
Latter-day Saints
oh.
are in Iowa. That's kind of like where this surrounds.
I found out Mormons, obviously Utah.
Yeah.
Apparently now Iowa. But also, apparently one of the other recommended states is Wisconsin because they consider it, quote, a wholesome place. I found this out from a doctor.
Wow.
She said that she just kept meeting Mormon people when she moved here. And she finally asked someone, like, why are you here? And they said it's one of the, like, if you have to leave Utah, like one of the recommended places to go.
Is Wisconsin.
It's considered a wholesome state. And then they get here and they're like, everyone's drunk at 3 in the afternoon.
There's so much cheese everywhere.
Everyone is so fat. I feel like to. So Iowa.
Yes. So Iowa, we meet Barbara Fisher, and she used to work for Doc and be one of his girlfriends.
From 1999 to 2007.
Yep. So she tells us that she, I think she was, you know, she was young, and so she's kind of looking, you know, what's my goal in life? What do I want to do? She's kind of searching for herself a little bit, and, you know, she reads up on his utopia and decides
t.i.g.e.r.s online
and decides that it sounds amazing. She's going to go learn to become a yoga animal trainer, as she puts it. And so she literally packs up her entire life, sells everything, including her car. Yeah. Has her dad drive her down there.
And they advertise them, like, everyone's vegetarian. Like you said, like, we use principles of yoga to train the animals. And she's like, this is everything I'm already doing.
Right.
So she, like, literally convinces her dad. Like, she sells her car. That's why her dad has to drive her
down there.
Like, she's not even giving herself a way to leave.
And so, apparently, her dad's parting words were, don't fall in love with your boss.
Yeah.
And so, I think she says something like, her dad could even tell at this time in Doc Antle's life that he was a chick getter. And I was like, that's a super gross term. I don't like it.
Womanizer.
Yeah, they're
player.
Yeah, that's like, way better. Chick getter.
Liked women. Like, it just... Chick getter.
I don't like it.
It's uncomfy for sure.
So Eric asks Barbara, why do you call him Bhagavan? What does it mean? And she gets this huge smile on her face and she says, Lord?
It means
Lord?
They're literally calling him Lord. But then we get, like, the different meanings, right?
Yes. So to Bhagavan, or to Doc Antle, Bhagavan means friend of God.
I think he's trying to, like, downplay it. You know, he's like, oh, I'm just a friend of God. I'm just a humble man with my tigers.
Well, see, that's the sticking point for me, because he doesn't say whether Bhagavan means he's a friend of God, or if you call him Bhagavan, you're a friend of God, and he is God.
Ooh, I took it as him being a friend of God.
Yeah.
But that's a fascinating interpretation.
Because he does not clarify whether he's the friend or he's the God.
I think he would like to be both. A certain type of friend, if you know what I mean.
And so his son, we meet his son Cody Antle. And
who has the same hair as his dad.
Yes, he 100%
long
does.
In a creepy braid. Ponytail.
Yep.
Braid,
not a
ponytail.
Braid. I think it is a ponytail. I think I'm wrong.
Long. Too long. That's the bottom line.
And so he tells us that it means master of the universe. It's the all-knowing, all-seeing kind of guy. And so Eric asks him, and your dad is that guy? And Cody responds, for certainly in his universe, he definitely is that character. There's definitely a pause before he says,
yes.
You know, I don't know what he was about to say, like, for sure he thinks so, but he changes it to, well, certainly in his universe, he thinks he's that guy.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting that he added, like, he certainly is that character.
Right.
You know, like, even he's, like, it's his dad, and he's, like, working there.
Yep.
Like, he's standing by him to some degree, but even he says, like, that character.
Yeah.
Like, he sees the, like, in his world, like, the weirdness of it and the kind of, like, other, like, it's like a play.
Yeah.
Like, it's like he's Doc Antle's playing a part.
Yeah.
So, it's, yeah. So, then we learn that Doc Antle, like, specifically apprentices and, like, gets these interns that come on as teenagers.
Yeah.
So, he gets these young kids.
Young girls.
Young girls specifically.
Yeah.
And they live on the preserve and stay for decades.
Yep.
So Barbara fills us in.
Yeah. It's rough, you guys.
Oh, man.
Low-level cult You do not get the best stuff.
High level cult.
High level. Well, when you're in the low part, like when you just start up, you do not get the best things.
Oh, no. When you're in the low levels of the cult. No. So she says, well, okay. So we have Doc saying, it's Shangri-La here. It's an unbelievable, unprecedented, magical place where magical things happen, where everything is neutral and happy and going well. And we flash to Barbara and she just goes, we lived in terrible horse stalls.
Yeah.
Everything was full of cockroaches. Yeah. So like, what? It's just this, it's this lie.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, it's this perfect place. Everything's going well. And Barbara's like, utopia. It was terrible.
Yeah.
Like she said that you'd open up your bread and it would just be full of cockroaches.
And she like nonchalantly was like, yeah, you just shake the cockroaches off the bread to make yourself a sandwich. It's
terrible.
Sounds so gross, you guys. I don't think I could, this is what another reason I could never be in a cult.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And so we get into the, this is where it starts to get into like Doc's like culty, like leader influence.
Right.
So apparently Doc would say like, you're this garbage person, but if you listen to me, I'll make you great.
Yeah.
And so Barbara says, like, if you wanted to get to the top very quickly, you'd sleep with him.
You'd sleep with him.
It's unclear. Oh,
so gross, you guys.
Yes. It's unclear if she slept with him or not.
Yes.
Because she says, I didn't want to sleep with him, but I thought about it.
Right.
So she doesn't say, like, if she ended up doing it or not.
Right. She doesn't admit. I feel like it's inferred that she did sleep with him.
I thought the opposite.
But Lindsay thinks the opposite, yeah.
But we hear, so there's the, she says that they're like worked so hard all the time that they pushed her to get a boob job.
Yeah,
breast implants. And she didn't want to. And she's like, I don't remember ever agreeing to it, but the appointment was just made for me.
Yeah. See, that's why I think she did sleep with him, because she's being influenced by this man that she thinks that she's in love with.
Right.
And because if you're not sleeping with someone, I think it's hard for that person or for you to be convinced then to just change, make this huge change to your own body if you're not sleeping with someone who's influencing you in that way.
That's true. But we do hear, she says also like that we go into like little bit later on like how much they work all the time. And she says that like they worked so much that she knew that if she got this surgery, she would get to sleep days to heal. And that's why she
that
just
was
like
the
didn't
biggest
fight it.
Draw to the surgery. Because you're gonna get these implants into your body so that you can sleep.
It's so sad.
Because it's a cult.
It's a cult.
Yeah.
So we get into a little grossness.
So much
here.
Worse. It's so gross, you guys. This whole episode's kind of gross.
Yeah, it's a rough one.
Yeah, so she tells us that he really looked for people who were either virgins or close to virgins. I don't know what that means.
I think, like, in maybe mental state.
Right.
You know, just, like, inexperienced, like, innocent.
That's okay. Okay. Because he wanted to be there first. Barf. And then
they were bonded
to him. That would make them bonded to him. Basically so that he can control them, because according to Barbara, she says that other women kept sleeping with him because, you know, there's this enlightening experience that a lot of cult leaders have. And usually it means, you know, I'm going to lay my hands on you and you are going to be enlightened.
It's called Shaktipad. So the guru touches you and you become enlightened. And Barbara has a disgusting and amazing quote.
Yep, she says his Shaktipa was his penis.
Essentially Shaktipa with penis. He touches them and brings them up to his level of enlightenment.
With his penis.
And she does this amazing face. She like raises her eyebrows and just like makes these wide eyes and like looks to the side. And she's like, okay.
Yeah.
Like gross. Oh. So there's a lot of manipulation going on over there.
For sure, for sure. We also, at you know, they kind of cut back then to Joe's life. And, you know, we see that he has two husbands. John, who we meet in episode one.
Who is privately owned by Joe Exotic. Oh,
his tattoos, you guys.
Do not forget.
So gross. So many tattoos. Okay, but then we meet his husband, Travis. Yeah, and so
who is young.
He's super young. He's like 19. Well, okay, but
he's so young.
We do realize and understand, come to understand that both of them were 19 when they met Joe.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so they're both super young, but Joe decides that he's going to get married to both of them, which is illegal.
It cannot have been a legal wedding, to my knowledge.
I mean, polygamy is illegal, period. I mean, regardless of where you stand on gay marriage, polygamy is illegal. It's still illegal,
right?
You know, in the United States.
Oh, that's true. And back then, it was homosexual. So
yeah.
So
in Oklahoma.
Oh, God. Yeah. So it's double illegal.
Yeah.
Because
probably double illegal.
Gay people can't have rights. It's fine.
Yeah. This to me was a really sad part of the documentary, especially watching it twice. So I watched it once all the way through and then watched it again so that I could take notes for the podcast. And you see this interview with Travis, mm-hmm. where it's not an interview with the film crew. It's just an interview kind of, it looks like it's on Joe's TV show.
Like an intro, like I'm a new employee kind of thing. Yeah. Like.
And Travis, you know, he starts off smiling and kind of joking around and telling us a little bit about himself. But
he's
then,
like laughing. He's like, I got these big hands.
Yeah.
Like.
And then all of a sudden it like, everything starts to get real almost with him because he has this moment where he's just like, kind of like doesn't know what else to say, and he looks like he's about to cry.
He looks
like he's just, he realizes in this moment that he's made the biggest mistake of his life and he does not know where to go from here.
Yeah, like just lost.
Yeah,
and
super
like
lost.
Sad. Yeah. And it's like the cameras are on, he's doing his little intro, and it seems like they turn off, you know, and he's like, okay, now what? Like,
it's super, it's disturbing.
It's one of those kind of chilling, like, you're like, ooh, okay.
Yeah.
Like, something's just wrong from the get-go.
Yeah.
And so we see the wedding, and John says, he's like, it wasn't surprising that Joe wanted to bring Travis in. Like,
right.
He talked of bringing other people into the relationship.
Sure. He does say, I was really young, I just didn't know any better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it doesn't, so we see the wedding, and they're all wearing pink shirts.
Yes.
It's a bold look.
Yeah.
Especially
with that bleached hair.
Yep. Yep. And so they get married or whatever. And then Joe's standing in the middle in between them. And he kisses, like, each of them, but they don't kiss each other.
Sure.
So I guess it's, like, I'm questioning, like, do they like each other?
Right.
You know, like, do they each just have one husband that's Joe and Joe has two?
Yeah, yeah.
Or, like, are they all three together? Or
yeah.
Is it just kind of like a little triangle from Joe, but, like, they are not connected?
Sure.
Because you don't see them, like, marrying each other.
Yeah.
So they never say anything about that. So it really does just seem like they're not there for each other.
Right.
Like, everyone's just there for Joe.
Yeah.
And Joe has his cake and is eating it, too.
Literally.
So.
He eats cake.
Wait, really? Oh, yeah, you're right. The wedding scene.
Yeah, he does.
For a second, I was like, does he eat a lot of cake in the documentary? I missed that.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so now we kind of get more into like the breakdown of the cult part of the documentary. And so everybody's kind of explaining, you know, how much they worked and how much they were paid. And so most people in both camps, the Doc Antle camp and Joe Exotics, say that they worked, you know, between 12 to 14 hours a day.
Yeah.
And so they work 7 days a week, 12 to 14 hours a day. And at Doc Antle's, they get paid $100 a week. And so if you break that down, it's a 98-hour work week, and they get paid $100, which means they make around $1.02 an hour.
It's crazy. And like, they don't get holidays. Like,
and it's
they
not
get
like
nothing.
Part of their job is just data entry. Like, they're working, like, cleaning cages and training and going through things and, you know, running the zoo when people are there.
And we hear that, like, Doc, like, he, like, controls everything. So, like, what they wear, like, their outfits, their hair, their boobs, apparently.
Right.
So, like, all of this, like, all day long, like, you're performing for these people and for your boss. And then you go home and you sleep in your horse stall at night. It's crazy. And we see Moksha, like, one of the wives, and she says that she works every day from 8 a.m. to midnight.
Yeah.
And she's like, it sounds insane, but it's my lifestyle. It's what I want to do.
Yeah.
Which just, like, she seems to kind of believe it.
Yeah.
Probably because she has gotten the Shaktipa with penis. Gross. So she's been enlightened to her work week. But we meet Robert Johnson.
Yeah.
Who just, like, you can see, he's holding this falcon the whole time also, and we never see him again.
Yeah.
And you can just see him, like, trying so hard to convince himself.
Yes.
Like, he's like, so many of us are programmed that we need weekends off and to only work so many hours a week. But that's, like, all he says.
Yeah.
Like, he never says, like, but actually, I like working. Like, right. He's just like, they make us think we need it. And he, like, never actually says that he doesn't. Like,
right.
He just trails off and he's like, I guess I don't. Like, you just see his face.
You,
like,
can see, like, his circular argument is going absolutely nowhere. Exactly. And he sounds insane. And then this is, like, part of a cult. You convince yourself that this is the life that you want.
Which is what Doc says. Like, the only survivors are the ones who look at this as a lifestyle and just dive into it.
Yep.
Which is BS. Like, that just means, like, they have to be brainwashed to survive there.
Yeah, it's crazy. So then we see that Carol doesn't have employees, or for the most part, she really doesn't have employees. She has volunteers, and they use this color-coded shirt system. And my question was, so if she gets people to volunteer, pays them nothing, does that make her the most successful cult leader?
Yes. And a huge hypocrite. Because in the beginning of this little, like, working section of the, like, this episode, we get a quote from Carol saying, the people who have these animals use them to lure in young people who have no idea how badly they're being treated.
Right.
And that she calls it a labor camp.
Yeah.
And then we find out that she, like, is literally paying them nothing.
Yeah.
Under this guise of, like, oh, they're volunteering, so it's okay.
And I don't... So there's this color-coded shirt system, which they... She doesn't... I 100% am convinced that Carol doesn't even know how it works.
No.
Because a volunteer is the one who explains everything to us. And so I don't understand... Because, you know, you have to be there and volunteering for several years before you can,
there's,
like,
move up. There's, like,
25
levels. Like, the first one. Right. And then you have to be the next level for 2 years. And then there's literally, like, 7 colors.
But what's the point?
Nothing.
Exactly.
It's to, like, keep them around.
It's so that you get a new shirt? Like,
it's
they're just in there
feel
for the
like
shirts?
They're accomplishing something so that these people stick with her.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't pay them.
Right.
They need some sort of reward.
It's crazy to me.
And she has these interns.
Right.
That work six days a week for 10-hour days.
The interns I almost get. Because if you are studying to be a zoologist or, you know, if you're like a... I could almost see them... interning or volunteering, but all these other people, it's not like they're getting college credit for it.
But even the interns, though, like, they're, it's not like there's just this whole, like, no touch environment.
Yeah.
So what are they actually doing?
Right.
Like, they're not actually getting good experience with the animals
for
anything, like, that will, like, apply to an actual zoo with, like, interactions or anything like that.
Yeah.
And it's she doesn't even know who they are. She even admits. She's like, I don't even know who the interns are until they hit level 5.
Yeah.
And she, like, laughs. And I'm like, honey, like, you're supposed to be the leader. Like, they're not even getting good guiding, like, experience.
Yeah.
And we have an employee say, like, oh, I'm here for Christmas.
Yeah. She doesn't even visit her family. She's just there volunteering
every
Christmas.
She is the most successful cult leader.
Yeah. I thought that was crazy. I was like, I mean, I guess live your life and do what you love, but that sounds insane to me.
Once you feel like you need to be there on Christmas, you're not volunteering.
And you also think, too, don't you work? Like, don't you... So do you have a job,
right,
but then you also go and volunteer all these hours?
I did not even think of that.
Yeah. All of these volunteers can't just be homeless vagrants.
Right.
Well, because they're not making
jobs,
any money from
right?
her. They have to have jobs, right? To support themselves.
I guess. Or they're all, like, really rich housewives? I don't know.
Yeah. Who knows,
I don't
man.
Know.
Yeah.
So we get this kind of intro to, like, then, like, her internet-ness.
Yeah. Carol's a social media queen.
We get the intro to her catchphrase, which makes me want to strike her. I'm going to put on my best Carol voice. She's like, hey, all you cool cats and kittens. It's Carol from Big Cat Rescue. And that's how she starts everything.
Yeah. Cool cats and kittens. You love it?
I hate it.
When you call me now, I'm going to be like, what's up, cool cat and kitten?
I will hang up.
Delete.
We'll block your phone number.
Yeah, and we see, so yeah, she, you know, tells us how she jumped on the internet bandwagon and all these things, and they make Eric sit in their living room, okay, which is, it's so bizarre. So they're sitting, Carol and her husband Howard are sitting on this couch, and they're watching this weird music video.
It doesn't make sense.
With this hippie girl singing about tigers or something, and Eric is sitting on this workout machine, because apparently they have no other furniture, chairs in their house that they None. Could possibly bring into this living room so that Eric could watch this weird video with them. And so you can tell that Eric is just has his face like, what is happening? And what is happening? What am I watching?
Like, they're like so pleased with themselves.
They're so happy. And at one point, Carol like awkwardly tries to touch Howard, like put her hand on his.
Like she's like moved by this. Like she's like, yes. And this woman like, beautiful world and free. It's just like, and she's not even like walking next to the animals. Like her image is just like superimposed, like over and next to these shots of the animals. Like, and we never hear who she is. We don't know why. Yeah. Like, it's so bizarre. But we do hear that because they like hopped on this so early, they've got a lot of followers because they were on the first wave of social media. So she said that she gets checks for like thousands of dollars a week from Facebook and YouTube.
That's crazy.
Which I don't understand how people make money.
I don't know
how
that works yet.
But apparently they do.
Yeah.
So she's making like a lot of money off their social media presence.
I think I understand the YouTube thing because I think you can like create a channel and then every time someone watches your video you get paid for it. But I don't understand the Facebook thing. Like I have a business page on Facebook and I've never received a check
from
Facebook.
Maybe she's lying, but
I mean it doesn't sound like it would be the first time.
Right. Yeah. So Joe says he went on a sanctuary tour and that it was awful. He said that they see like 12 cats. She says that she has over 100. Right. They don't see any of them except these 12. So he thinks it's a lie. Maybe, I mean, we've heard that like they only display 12.
Right.
And the other 100 are on their 40 acres.
Sure.
Who's to say?
Right.
But apparently the USDA gives them perfect inspections like every time.
Yes.
And Joe says like they cannot get one for their farm, which his does look jankier, but like not that much.
Right.
Like, if she's getting perfect inspections, he should at least get, like, a B or something.
Right, right.
Like, her place is not that great.
Yeah.
So he goes and rents this helicopter and flies over their farm to get video footage of these, like, other cats. He wants to see if they exist. We don't ever hear if he, like, finds them or not.
Yeah.
But Carol has this cat that has seizures when it hears, like,
loud noises.
Like, loud, like,
mechanical.
Mechanic noises. And so she's, like, blaming Joe for this, though, which, like, it's his fault, but it's not like he knew.
Right.
So she's like, how dare he? He's just flying over, giving my cat seizures. And I'm like, that's not his goal. Like, so then she says that she ends her emails with, judge me by the enemies I have made. And she's like, so, you know, if this is the person that hates me, I'd say that's pretty good.
Yeah.
And I was like, ugh. Ugh. It's just like a suburban soccer mom, petty woman, like house phrase that would be painted above your doorframe. Like, I just judge me by the enemies I have made. And I'm like, oh my gosh, all of America at this point, Carol. Like, no one likes you. I'm sorry.
Yeah, she's a piece of work.
She is something else.
Well, and then we go back to Barbara, and she tells us, again, this is part of cult mentality. She kind of explains how Doc changes all of their names to different things. And that's what cult leaders do. They change who you are and kind of mold you into what their belief system or what their values or what their cult agenda is so that you have no sense of yourself. And then the only person, in air quotes, that you know is this person that they've created for you inside this cult.
And she, apparently Barbara was there for like a while in the beginning because she remembers like all of his now wives coming. And she's like, China was Michelle, Moksha was Meredith, Rajni was Renee, which like, I guess makes sense, like, that those aren't their real names.
Yeah.
Because they're wild names, which I didn't even think of it until she said that.
Right.
But she says that she had her name changed to Bala, like, legally.
Legally changed.
So you're not just, it's not a work nickname. Like, he's forcibly changing that. And then, like, you become this other person. Like, it's a really quick way to, like, succumb to completely new things.
Yeah. Yeah. Eric is asking Doc a bunch of questions. Again, his eyes are so wide, and he hates everything that Eric is saying and doing. And you can really tell that he's super aggravated. And Doc responds, "You're leading me down a road where people are just going to say you have to join a effing cult to be a tiger trainer. Promise you, been here 35 years. I've heard it all forever."
So he's just vehemently denying this. And the question is, like, if he doesn't want to admit it, or if he actually doesn't, like, see that as what he's doing.
Right.
You know, like, does he not actually see his own actions for what they are? Like, is he blind to himself? Because that's a thing sometimes. Yeah, like, people, he's just like, no, I'm just trying to run my, this is what I need to do to be successful.
Yeah.
Or is he just like, nodded, because who would willingly be like, yeah, I lead a cult?
100%, I'm a cult leader. Right. Well, the answer is Joe Exotic. Well, because in the next cut, he literally says, you know, Doc Handel's got his little cult, I've got my little cult. Which, I think we talked about this last time, how Joe has this, like, sense of honesty that he just...
too stupid to defend himself. Like, he's just too honest for his own good.
Yeah.
Like, not all the time. Which, like, episode 3, we start to get into a little more of, like, his lying, like, manipulativeness. Yeah. And it gets a little more questionable.
Sure.
But with a lot of things, like, he's just, like, laying it on the line.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
you know, he does admit, too, that he hires people who are on their, like, last break. Mm-hmm. You know, they're kind of down in the gutter, hit the lowest point of his life. And, you know, they may have just got out of prison. And his thought is, if this is all they have and it's halfway decent, they will work hard for it. And they'll feel a sense of loyalty because he probably gave them a chance when no one else did or would.
And we see that. We have, like, they video some employees, like, two different ones. One guy's like, yeah, this keeps me from drinking. And the other's like, it keeps me from getting into trouble.
Yep.
And Rick Kirkham says that he has people in the city that will call and report to him, like, hey, this person was at a bus stop last night. They're still there this morning. And we see video footage of him talking to this lady at a gas station. Like, I'll give you a chance.
Sure.
And she's, like, crying and saying thank you.
Right.
And so there's an element of it that,
because,
like,
because he's their savior.
Right. So there's an element of it that's, like, sure, he is giving them a chance, and that is nice. And then there's also, like, cult leader taking advantage of weak people.
Exactly.
But the people feel positively towards him.
Right.
He says he pays, the $150 a week for about 12 hours a day.
Yeah. So that's 84 hours a week, and it's $1.78 an hour. So roughly 76 more cents an hour than Doc Antle's place.
And their living conditions are... I mean, if we're on a scale of 1 to 10, Doc Antle's horse stalls and cockroaches being 0.
Right.
Like, Joe Exotic's staff lives in, like, a 0.5 or a 1.
Yeah.
Like, it's better, but not by much.
Yeah.
They share these trailers.
Yeah. None of the water's working.
Ugh.
There's no running water. There's no way to, I'm guessing, flush the toilet if they can't even wash their hands or take a shower. No. Like,
there's like one AC unit for the whole thing. The whole staff lives between 4 mobile homes.
Yeah.
And there's like, there's a video showing them finding a rat in like the drawer.
Oh, so gross.
And they're walking around and like, it looks disgusting.
Yeah.
And Rick Kirkham says like, it could be 120 degrees in there at night, and that's the nice one.
Yeah.
So they're living, it's not a horse stall and it's not cockroaches.
Right.
And they're making 76 cents an hour more.
Right.
But, like, it's not much better.
Right.
It isn't.
You know, the next thing we learn, again, about kind of their living situation, it kind of ties into that, is that Joe Exotic, I think part of the reason he gets, you know, he can cut down how much it costs him to feed tigers every year is because they get these donations from this Walmart. All the Walmart, surrounding areas. And they basically give all of their expired meat to Joe Exotic. And he just kind of explained that not necessarily all of it's expired, because as soon as you, which is true, like if you are at a grocery store and you take something and put it in your cart and you get up to the checkout and you've, let's say, forgotten your wallet, they can put all of the produce perhaps and like canned goods and stuff like that back on the shelf if you don't come back, but they cannot put the meat back because they have no idea how long it's been out of the refrigerated or freezing section. So
the employees say that they eat off the meet truck.
Yeah.
They
come up and pick
their
pickings.
They talk about it, like, positively.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, we get lobster tails.
Yeah.
Like, we get steaks.
Yeah.
So that's, like, this dichotomy, again, of, like, you're eating off a meat truck.
Yeah.
It's expired and old Walmart goods. Yeah. But they're like, oh, well, like, I get all these interesting good meals.
Yeah.
So they either actually are okay with it or just don't see, like, the dark side of it.
Yeah. It's gross.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so Carol says that, like, the people and animals are just being abused.
Yep.
Like, both sides. Yep. And we see Barbara, like she says, which is such a sad quote.
Yeah.
She says, I was really just looking for someone to tell me what to do.
Yeah.
Doc says men are pigs and women are sheep. And I was a sheep, I guess, ripe for the slaughter.
Yeah.
Which is so sad.
The end of the documentary is hard because, you know, you realize how little they know about what goes on when they're not around. Because Barbara tells us about her favorite cub that she worked with, that she trained really well and had a connection with. And then one day he was just gone. And she was told, you don't need to worry about it. Doc knows where it goes. And I think it's Carol who, or no, Bill Ranke tells us that there is a rumor that Doc Antle euthanizes his cubs when he's done with them.
And that there's reports of, like, employees hearing gunshots in the night.
Yep.
And then the next morning, a cat's gone.
Yep.
And it's like, you can't keep them all. I know. It's my business.
Right.
And way at the end of the whole, like, documentary,
yeah,
there's one line that says, like, Doc Antle never responds to this claim.
Yeah.
So I'm mentioning it now because I had forgotten about the cub euthanasia thing by the time we got there. So he doesn't.
Yep.
He does never respond to it. He doesn't even address it.
Yep.
So it's just kind of this floating question mark of, like, what happens to these tigers.
Ugh. It's super sad. It was kind of an enraging part of the documentary because if you're breeding cubs because this is your bread and butter, then you have a responsibility to figure out what you're going to do with that cub once it's out of this stage where it would be safe for the public to be around it. And if you're euthanizing them or shooting them, like, that is just not okay.
Or that's, even, like, selling them to owners who don't know what
they're doing. Exactly. You better have a way of...
You need to have a game plan.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. All right. Ugh. So then we come back to Mark McCarthy again, and he drops a bomb on us at the end of episode two. You know, he tells us that Carol thinks she's all that. And
he says she thinks she's the Cleopatra of cats and she's not that good.
Yeah, she's not that good. And he even says, like, if anyone says anything negative about her, she'll just go after them with her millions of dollars that she inherited from her dead husband that's been missing for 20 years. And then you just hear, like, a record scratch, like, and Eric is like, whoa, 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 let's back this up, friend. And he says, how does someone's husband just go missing? Mario tells us that he thinks Carol is full of it and that her husband is probably buried on her property. And Joe says, straight up, I think she fed him to the tigers.
Agreed, Joe. But, and then we get Carol, and she, like, in this blasé attitude with this eye roll, says, like, oh, it just makes for wonderful newspaper sales to speculate that I fed him to the tigers, which is just crazy.
Yeah. There's, like, a dramatic pause, and she rolls her eyes, and she's like, it's just crazy.
I'm like, that's a long pause, Carol. I don't care if it's been 20 years. Like, if I didn't kill my husband and someone was accusing me of killing him, like, I would not be able to be that casual about it. So
blasé about it, yep.
Like, there's no, the laughter and the eye roll in this next episode gets into it a lot more. She's so flippant.
Yeah.
That, like, I don't care how long it's been, if he was the worst person. If you're being accused of killing your husband when you didn't, you can't.
Yeah.
I don't know.
How do you react that way?
Right.
Yeah.
It's just suspect.
Yeah. And so that's literally how episode two ends. So, of course, that makes you excited and want to go on to episode three because you're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Probably most of us haven't heard about this rumor that her husband disappeared. And so we're like, we want to know more.
Yes. And we will give you more.
We will. All right. So that's the end of episode two. So at the end of the episodes, we talk about stuff that we love and want to promote. So, Lindsay, what do you got?
I have been knitting lately. I have been...
Lindsay's 90.
I am 90 years old. I like tea and cats and knitting and oatmeal. That is also 100% true. All those facts are true. But I've been, it's been nice in quarantine. Yeah. Like, it's been not a lot to do.
Right.
You know, so, like, as I've been, like, just hanging around, like, it's just an activity to do, and I can give things to people, so right. That's nice. Yeah. I can only make squares. I'm not that talented. I can make blankets or scarves, so hit me up if you would like something square.
Or rectangular.
It's been nice. I learned off YouTube. Nice. Hobby Lobby has the best yarn. Pro okay. tip.
Yeah.
It's cheap and lots of variety. So yeah. Knitting.
Huh. That's cool. I don't know if it was knitting or crocheting I tried one of them though once and I did not make a square. I made like a baseball diamond shape where it's, you know, you have the three plates and you have that big circle.
Yes.
That's the outfield. Yep. That's what I made. Like, there was definitely one or two points that looked like a square, but the rest of it was just a giant circle and it was kind of a hot mess.
I've heard crocheting is harder to keep the shape consistent.
Okay.
Because there's a lot more, like, you have to regulate the tension or something. Yeah. Where, like, it's a lot harder to make, like, a super curvy thing when you're knitting. Because gotcha. It's just, unless you, like, lose track of your... Because right. you can lose track of your stitches when you crochet. Sure.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can't when you're knitting.
Yeah.
Unless you, like, drop a stitch. Gotcha. But, like, there's only so many there, so.
Yeah. All right. Interesting tidbits.
I am not that talented. I'm just bored.
All right. So I would like to plug the new show that just dropped, I think, a week or two ago on Netflix, and it's called Unorthodox. Ooh. And it follows a Hasidic Jew community. It's based on a real book, and it kind of follows this girl's tale of kind of breaking out and escaping this really, you know, Hasidic Jew community. And it's really, really good. It's on Netflix. It's only 4 episodes long, and I think they're about 45 to maybe 50 minutes long, so about an hour each.
Is it based on a true story?
Yeah, it is. It's based cool. on a true story. It was a book that someone wrote, and so they kind of based the series and the screenplay off of the book that she wrote. It's really good. It's really well done. The cinematography is great. The music's great. The story is really good. You'll really like it, I think. So check out Unorthodox on Netflix.
Add it to the list.
Yeah. All right. So thank you guys again for listening. You can find us on Instagram, which is at Rambling. Nope. Constance. At Constant Rambling Pod. And then you can also email me constantrambling@gmail.com.
Woo.
Yeah.
Reach so, out.
Thanks for listening. Yeah. If you have any suggestions on future things for us to cover, let us know. That would be super fun. So thanks for listening. Thanks for rambling with us and have a great weekend.
Bye guys.